listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It is the Fours Up Podcast, and it is Wednesday, September 2nd, and we are 8 days away. Braxton Berrios days away, D. Wiggins days away from Canes football. It's your boy, Marsh, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, it's September. It's football season. How are we feeling?
We are Duke Johnson days away, my man. I am so pumped. Yeah. Only the greatest running back in the last 15 years, Marsh. Not a big deal.
Yeah. When I posted like a video on Twitter it was of Braxton, someone responded, said, "So you're picking Braxton over the leading rusher in UM history?" And without hesitation, I responded, "Absolutely."
Yeah, I'm a Duke Johnson guy, though. I will, I would go to the ends of the earth for Duke.
Yeah, Duke's a good guy. Yeah, I just, like I said, I didn't really get to see him play that much at Miami, but I mean, dude was incredible. But man, we're a week away.
Yeah, I'm so pumped.
We are a week away. Like before this call, you and I were making plans for what we're doing for the UAB game. Like it's here.
We're trying to decide what we're gonna eat. Dude, should we like throw it up on YouTube and just have people stream like our reaction?
Yeah.
Let's throw that out there. So what if we set up my laptop so that the camera is on me and Marsh? I don't know if we haven't talked about this, so if you hate this idea, that's fine. If you don't want a camera on you for 3 hours.
I just have to lose some more weight before that.
Yeah. I'd have to grow some more hair.
Okay, yeah, I'll put it up on Twitter and we'll see what the audience has to say.
You could potentially do a live stream where, you know, it's like you feel like you're in the room watching the game with us, and you said your brother's probably going to be there, and you know, so people can see our reactions live. You know, pull up on YouTube what it's like being in the Marsh Thomas residence with us.
In the den.
Yeah,
I'm down for that. Okay, so we have two really big guests today, and I am so excited for this. But before we get started, do you want to talk about our boy AB?
Oh yeah. So I just, you know, we've done a lot with our guy AB, Adrian Bistolfi. He's supported our show for a long time. You know, he's designed, done graphic design work for, you know, me for personal projects. He's done stuff for Fours Up. He's, you know, he did the radio show that me and Derek Co have, and you know, so we just want to give a shout out to his new venture. It's called Stickers by AB, and on Twitter, follow them. It's at Stickers by AB, but that's Stickers with a Z at the end. So STICKERZ by AB. So yeah, check them out. He has a whole bunch of Miami Hurricanes themed stickers. You know, he said that they're the kind of quality that you can put on your car, you know, or put on water bottles or coolers or whatever. They're really cool stuff. You know, he has one of the old Orange Bowl, you know, Sean Taylor. He has a D'Ara King one. So cool stuff. But awesome. Shout out to AB and his company, and go check him out, guys. AB's a good dude, and he's super talented. So
yeah, go give him a follow, check out his stuff. Really good dude. What do you say we get our first guest on the line?
Let's do it, man. I'll call him in now.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing good, man.
What's going on, brother? How are you, man?
And I'm good. How you doing?
Pretty good. So we now welcome on Torian Wilson. He's the CEO of Crafting Lineman. You're a Miami native, correct?
Correct. I am born and raised.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Miami native, played at Miami Northwestern, played his college ball at UCF, spent some time in the NFL, and is now working with offensive linemen. And he's worked with a few of our Hurricane offensive linemen. So we want to talk to him about that. So my first question for you, Torian, is, first of all, how you doing, man, with all this, you know, this COVID stuff? You excited for football season?
Man, I'm doing great, man. You know, just staying healthy, staying out the way, man. I'm very excited. You know, football can't get here fast enough. You know, I think last week was the first game. Austin Pugh, I think that was the first game to set the tone. And now, man, I'm just ready to see the football season kick off.
Hell yeah. We love it, man. We love it. And the Canes kick off in 8 days. Did you grow up a Canes fan?
I did, man. I to be honest, I think every kid that played football down here in South Florida, I really honestly think that, you know, they've grown up to be a Canes fan.
Hey, we love to hear that, man. We love to hear that. And especially with, you know, the recruiting going as well as it is as of late, you know, that's great to hear. So my first question about the Canes is I wanted to ask you about Coach Garen Justice. Now, Jordan and I are really, really big fans of him and just what he's been able to do since he's gotten to Miami, whether it's recruiting wise or just development over spring camp and fall camp with these linemen. And I know you talked to him last month. I saw on your Twitter. What were your impressions of him? And do you think this was a good hire for Miami?
Man, Coach Justice, man, he's a genuine guy. You know, just talking to him, you know, the few times that I've had, you know, he's just a genuine guy, man. And you can tell he's a player's coach. You know, he's a guy who's for the players, you know, just by training some of the guys, you know, some of his guys, you can tell that they enjoy him. They love being around him. They love the energy that he brings. You know, it's like a fresher breath air, you know, with just by what these guys was telling me. And, you know, he just seems like, you know, that coach that, you know, that's a player's coach, but also a coach that'll get after you, you know, when needed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we love the hire because kind of like what you said, he's a genuine guy. And him, Coach Likens, Coach Lashley, to me, you know, I've been following this program since I was a kid, and they just bring a sense of positivity and, you know, a genuine feeling that I feel like has been lacking from Miami for a long time. And so last year, as everyone knows, Miami's offensive line was absolutely, you know, it was bad. You know, we gave up the most sacks of any Power 5 school. Do you chalk that up more to coaching or the youth on the offensive line in 2019?
I would say a little bit of both. You know, as a coach, you know, I'm a trainer and I was a coach. So as a coach, you know, you have to take responsibility, you know. You know, you have to stand up and try to figure out what's going on with, you know, with the situation. And you also have to put players in position to be successful, you know. And also, it's college football. You know, you have guys that are young, and in high school and youth league, you know, being young really doesn't matter too much. But once you get to the college level, pro level, you know, being a young guy, it takes time. You know, things doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, one of my buddies always say, man, you can't build Rome in one day. So it's a process that you have to take. And I think they're making strides in the right direction.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a question about one of our players last year. The left tackle that we started, Zion Nelson. I would love you to break down the situation that he was put in. He comes in as a true freshman. I'm pretty sure when he signed his letter of intent, he was only 240 pounds. So that means he, you know, during the spring and summer, he had to, I mean, I think he got up to 280-ish by game day. So, you know, he puts on 40, 50 pounds. He has to learn a new system. He's only 18 years old going up against the Florida Gators. Could you kind of break down what that would be like, that, you know, just how difficult of a situation that would be for a guy like Zion?
Man, that would definitely be a difficult position to be in. You know, like you said, you coming in at 240, learning a new position, you know, having to gain weight, and then having to learn how to play with that weight. You know, that's an extra 40 pounds that you put on that you're not used to. So by him, you know, coming in and being a freshman, being a young guy, and, you know, having to learn the system, you know, quicker than most, you know, that's definitely a hard position to be in, you know. And most people that haven't played college football wouldn't understand that. You know, they would just say, you know, what's going on? Why he can't do that? You know, just have a lot of, you know, why nots instead of, you know, figuring out and just really thinking about the whole situation, man. And, you know, now that you said that, man, that is very difficult. You know, being 240 and then having to gain 40 pounds, you know, that's tough. You know, that really is tough. That's why it's a process.
Yeah, and week one versus Florida Gators, too. That's not an easy out. I mean, they're known for putting out good D linemen and stuff. So.
Right, that's SEC ball right there, man. And being thrown in that fire, yeah, man, that's definitely tough.
Yeah, and Zion is a player that I'm excited to watch grow because I think he's now up to like 310, 315, but it's more of an athletic 310, 315 pounds because, you know, with Rhett Lashley, you know, you're in the spread offense instead of the pro style, which Dan Enos ran last year. How much of a difference does it make for an offensive lineman, you know, change, like, because from what we've heard, the spread offense, it benefits offensive linemen just because, you know, you're getting the ball out quicker. How much do you think that plays into, you know, the offensive line play?
It's very important to be in the right system. You know, you can't take a block and put it into a circle. You know what I mean? So you have to, you can't take a square and put it into a circle. So, you know, you have to make sure that your offense fits around the guys that's going to be protecting your athletes. So if that isn't on point or, you know, meshing the right way, you know, the offense is definitely going to look, you know, offbeat. So, man, it plays a vital part to, you know, to the offensive line play. You have to make sure that your playbook and your plays are showing the strengths of your offensive line.
So I
have a question. You know, you're in the training business. So how would you go about preparing differently from last offseason to this one in regards to the Miami Hurricanes? Last season, you know, we were running a multiple set that was mostly pro style. You know, lots of seven-step drops, lots of play action, stuff like that. And then in this offense with Rhett Lashley, you know, we're going to – I mean, I think Lashley averaged like 96 plays a game or something like that last year at SMU. How does the preparation in the offseason change when you're switching up systems that drastically?
Well, to be honest, man, it really comes with endurance. You know, that would be my word for the offseason is endurance, because you're going from running 70 plays, 76 plays to about 90 that you said, between 90 and 100. Man, that's a big difference. The numbers might not seem like it, but when you're out there and you're playing, that takes a toll on your body and your legs. And, you know, so it would definitely be endurance. So my training system would be just building that leg endurance, building that punch endurance, because, you know, you're punching all day, you're taking sets all day, you know, all game. So, you know, like I said, that takes a toll on your body. So if your body is not accustomed or can withstand that 90 play, you know, game, you know, by the next game, man, you're going to be pretty much dead. Your legs are going to be dead. So, you know, my training system would just, you know, be putting these guys in position to endure that 90 to 100 play game, you know, with a lot of play sets. I will definitely put them in position, put them in the same position that they would in a game, you know. So we would have, you know, those 90 play drives. We might go a whole practice where, you know, they're taking sets, they're taking 100 sets, they're taking 90 sets, they're taking whatever they would that would translate them, you know, as far as into the game. So it'll have to translate.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be very interesting to see this offense, this new offense next week when the Canes open up against UAB. And so you've worked with two offensive linemen from the Canes that I know of, Usman Traore and Jared Williams, and both are expected to be on the starting offensive line for Miami in week one. Usman Traore is a guy that not a lot of Hurricanes fans know about. He transferred over last summer from Hutchinson Community College and didn't see the field that much last year. But I'm excited about him. He was an All-American when he was in JUCO. How would you could you break down Usman for us and then talk about Jared Williams a little bit?
Yeah, so and I also train John Campbell as well too, John Campbell Jr.
Okay. I think he's expected to be our starting left tackle. So yeah, talk about all three then.
Yeah, so John Campbell, man, he's athletic. Like he is crazy athletic. He's that guy when, you know, you think of, you know, most left tackles, you know, athletic, big, can move their feet, can stay in front of their guy, can mirror their guy. That's what you look for in a left tackle. And just training him, man, you could just see his feet, you know, because with my training, man, I make sure these guys are put in position, in awkward positions, because playing offensive line, you will be put in a position that you're not accustomed to. So, you know, with him, you know, he was dominating the workout. He was dominating the training. And that goes to show just how athletic he is. And then for Big Usman, man, he's a power guy. You know, he's that guy that you want at guard. Like, he's a true guard. He's a true inside player, interior player, you know, a mauler. You know, he also has good feet. And, you know, I would think of him as more of a run blocker, a run blocking type offensive lineman. But also has good feet, man, plays with great power, man. Play with low center of gravity. And then Big Jared, man. He's a dancing bear. He really is. He's a dancing bear. Training him as well. You know, you can tell that he has good feet, man. And I tell people all the time, because I played in the AAC. You know, there's good competition there, man. And the speed rusher, the rushers in the AAC are pretty much linebackers, you know, or former safeties, man. Shaquille Griffin, you know, just to kind of get a picture of what the speed is playing defensive end in the AAC. So I always, you know, vouch for tackles in the AAC because, you know, you have to have great feet playing in that conference. You know, you're dealing with, you know, different type of rushers than the normal in your traditional Power Five conference. But Jared, man, like I said, he's a dancing bear. You know, big, powerful guy, plays with great balance, you know, strong core. You know, we did a lot of different drills to work the core, to work power, to work that center of gravity. And, you know, he definitely has great feet, man. Definitely has great feet.
So Jared coming in from Houston was one of the biggest moves that Miami made this offseason. You know, he protected Derek King for a couple seasons. Do you mm-hmm. think that he's the kind of guy that can that will come in and automatically make the Miami offensive line better with his experience, you know, and things like that?
You know, I don't see why not. I truly don't see why not, man. You know, just from training him this offseason, I definitely think that he can come in and be a starter, definitely be a key factor. And just by the names that, you know, that we're talking about right now, man, I don't see why University of Miami should not be a contender this year. You know, and then with Coach Justice as their offensive line coach, man, like, there's big things coming for UM. And, you know, it's starting off with these three guys this year, starting off with Coach Justice. And, you know, I truly think that these guys are going to be successful this year. I think they're moving in the right direction. And, you know, success. I think success is in their near future.
We love to hear that, man. We love to hear that. So okay. I have two non-Kane related questions for you. Okay. So you played with at UCF. You protected Blake Bortles, correct?
Correct.
So he's one of my favorite guys in the NFL, just because he seems like the kind of person where he just seems like a cool guy. What was playing with Blake Bortles like?
Man, you hit that spot on. That's exactly what it was, man. He's a cool, laid back guy. You know, he's not really with the rah rah. You know, he's that guy that you want to lead you, because, you know, he doesn't get rattled. You know, just thinking back to, you know, the Fiesta Bowl years, man, when, you know, we was down some games, we was up some games, but his emotion never changed. His play never changed. He was always level headed. And by you being the offensive lineman, you know, you look at your quarterback and you see not one piece of worry on his face, man, you have no choice but to say, okay, you know, we got this thing in the bag. no matter if we was up or down. But you know, Blake, man, Blake is a great guy, man. I love blocking for Blake. You know, and he treated his offensive linemen the right way. You know, those nights at Golden Corral, you know, taking us out to eat, man, like that's what you want in the quarterback.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then my second question, you spent some time with the New England Patriots, and I'm not a Patriot fan. I'm a Cowboy fan, but I'm a huge Tom Brady and Bill Belichick fan. What was it like being in that building and around that winning environment and that kind of, you know, football culture?
Man, the one word that I can think of just right off the bat is structure. You know, everything was had to be precise, had to be clean, had to be neat, had to be on time. You know, it was just everything was structured to the T, you know, from the time that you wake up to the time that you leave the building. You knew the expectations, you know. And then Tom, man, he's a professional. You know, he's definitely a professional. He's the guy that and a lot of people are shocked when I say this, but he's the guy that talks to the janitor. Like if he sees whoever, doesn't matter who it is, he's going to stop, take time out of his day to have a conversation with them and make sure everything is good with them. Coach Belichick, same thing, man. He's a structured guy. Like, he wants things, as long as you're doing things the right way, he does not have a problem. You know what I mean? So he's just, you know, it's just structure. Everything is structured out to be successful. Like, you have no choice but to be successful when you're in that building and when you're in that system, because you know, everyone puts each other in position to be successful.
Well, I got two questions for you before we wrap things up. Mm-hmm. My first one is I want to know the difference from a lineman's perspective, the difference that it makes having a guy like De'Aaron King under center. A guy with extreme athletic ability as opposed to a typical pro style. Like, how does it change your job, I guess, having a guy with the elite athleticism that De'Aaron King has?
You know, just from my perspective, is two things. One, you definitely want a guy like that in the backfield because he can make things happen, you know, when things get cluttered, you know. And also, he can make you look like, you know, you're a first-round draft pick as well, just by the way he moves in the pocket, the way he can suck the defensive end back into you, you know, just by the way he's moving in the pocket. And then also, man, sometimes it can almost be a curse, man, because a lot of times, you know, you have mobile quarterbacks and, you know, they're a little bit excited back there. So sometimes, you know, you can – Your defensive end can run into the quarterback, you know, just by him sitting back there. And, you know, just watching De'Aaron King, you know, and what he did at Houston, he doesn't seem like that quarterback that will put you in a bad position. You know, he seems like a guy that's back there that knows when to use his legs, when to throw it, you know, when to get out of bounds. So, you know, he seems like a smart guy back there. And that's why Houston was so successful a lot of those years. And, you know, I think that, you know, I think that he's going to be successful at UM, you know, just with his athletic ability and the things that he can do back there.
Okay. And then my last question for you, you went to Northwestern High School, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So I'm curious as to the culture at high schools like Northwestern's that at times have kind of been a quote unquote Miami pipeline, right? We mm-hmm. have four Northwestern kids in this current class. I mean, you were what, class of 2010 or 2009?
2010.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would have been right after, you know, we had that 2008 class where we brought in all those, elite Northwestern kids, you know? So, mm-hmm. How does that, like, pipeline, or how does that affect high school teams? You know, like, when you come off a year where a school like Miami is, you know, recruiting all your teammates, how does it change the locker room in terms of recruiting? Does it have an impact?
I don't think it really has an impact. you know, that I truly feel that, you know, you get a Miami Northwestern kid, man, you're getting a kid that's hungry, you're getting a kid that's determined, you know, that want to go out there and play this game that they love. I don't think that it changes the locker room per se. If you're talking about the college locker room, I don't think that it changes that locker room at all. I think that it just makes guys hungry. You know, it makes you hungry because imagine seeing, you know, five or six guys from the same team that's going to be coming, you know, and you're already in that locker room. You're definitely going to say, OK, you know, I got to get things in order. I got to make sure that I'm on point. You know, I think honestly, it makes a locker room better. You know, when you have guys that come in that can compete, you know, college is about getting better each season. You want to maximize your potential. You want to do better than the last year, than the previous year. So continuing to build that tradition, continuing to build that connection between Northwestern and Miami, I think all that's doing is making the University of Miami a better place. You know, getting guys that's ready to eat, to be honest.
Absolutely. I love that. So I know you got somewhere to go, Torian. So before you leave, why don't you tell people about Crafting Lineman, you know, your services and where they can find you at?
Yeah, so Crafting Lineman is a training business that I put together that focuses on the big athletes, which is the offensive and defensive linemen. You know, and not only that, man, we also mentor the youth as well. But what I focus on is making sure that within my training, guys are leaving more knowledgeable, more flexible, and stronger, not only physically, but mentally. And also within my training, you know, I have camps. So I just had a showcase last week. I had over 100 kids. I had two different sessions to make sure that everything was in order with COVID and everything. So, you know, I had two sessions. I split the groups up, but I had over 100 kids there just showcasing their talents. I had 24/7 there as well. So helping kids get recruited, man, the ones that are getting overlooked. You know, my biggest thing is I want to help, you know, and that's why I feel God put me on this earth is to help. You know, that's my purpose. And also with that comes, you know, I help kids break down their film. So, you know, kids send me their film from the game that they played. And, you know, we go over it. We talk about it. We go in depth with it. And, you know, they leave out knowing the how and the why throughout the whole game. And also, you know, we create highlights for kids as well. So, you know, if you're a high school player and you need a highlight to send off to colleges and things like that, we also create that. You can find me on Instagram, crafting_lineman. And then my website is craftinglinemanfl.com.
Perfect. Awesome. Yeah, we'll go check it out. We just gave you the follow on Instagram from Fours Up. So, dude, this was such a great interview, Torian. Thank you so much, man. And we'd love to have you back on once the season gets going. Sound good?
Ah, thank you, man. And that sounds perfect.
All right, brother. Have a good one. Thank you so much.
All right, you too.
See ya. Cool, man.
That was great.
Yeah, it's fun to get a perspective, you know, from the big uglies, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And someone who has talked with Coach Justice and worked with some of our offensive linemen, very excited about Jared Williams, the way that he was talking. Yeah. I love the dancing bear. I'd love that.
Yeah. I was excited about the way he was talking about, John Campbell too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So,
I feel like we have a lot of talented dudes, you know, a lot of talented physical specimens on our offensive line squad. I just don't think, you know, I don't think the coaching was up to par. You know, the scheme and the coaching was kind of crappy last year for the offense and the offensive line. And so, you know, hopefully Lashley and Justice can maximize the potential because we really do have some good athletes on offensive line. We just it wasn't translating into the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and it, the way that Torian was talking about it, it just goes to show you how much, how big of a difference the scheme is to, especially towards offensive linemen. Because last year, you asked great questions, especially about Zion Nelson and just the, I mean, you took back Torian even when you said, you know, that he came in at 240. And, he was like, oh man, that like, now that you say that, it just goes to show you, because so many people ragged on him last year and he struggled. But yeah. I mean, we just have to remember the dude was 18, and you just have to remember the process that he went through from coming to Miami, the weight gain, being thrown in at left tackle, you know, against a team like the Florida Gators and for the rest of the season. So,
yeah. Well, I always think context is important, you know, like I think it's fair to, you know, after that Florida game, be like, wow, Zion played like garbage, you know, because he did. Right. But that doesn't mean we label him as a garbage player and write him off forever, which I feel like people have. But that's not fair. You know, I mean, he has time to grow into his body to, you know, just develop so much more and become a good player. I really think, especially as an upperclassman, he can be a very valuable contributor. You know, he's fighting for a starting spot right now. And, I mean, I don't know how much eligibility Usman has, but, you know, Zion could be a mainstay. I mean, he could get 2-3 years on as a starter on our offensive line in his career.
Yeah, so, and I think Usman is a redshirt sophomore, too. So, okay. I mean, I believe he's a redshirt sophomore. Yeah. So, you know, you're looking at 2-3 years of him as well. And which is awesome, you know, in this scheme especially, you know.
You have such a talented line, man.
I know. It makes me so damn excited.
Because we're probably only going to lose one starter, and that's maybe. If Jared Williams has a good year and gets drafted, he'll probably be the only starter to leave. And then we'll return Ja'Kai Clark and Zion. So yeah. we'll have five of our six of our seven top linemen coming back.
That's awesome. That's so awesome to hear.
So we're back. We took a quick break. We're waiting for our next guest, and he's a few minutes out, but I figured that we'd fire up the old episode and get back into things, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Very excited for this next interview. Loved the last interview that we did with Torian. I could talk football with that guy for hours.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, like, and he didn't spend too much time on the Patriots, but anybody who spent any time with the Patriots, I'm just so infatuated by that team and by Coach Belichick and Tom Brady. Like, yeah. I love getting insights into what it's like in New England.
Yeah. You know, but I heard that Bill Belichick really, really hates puppies and kittens. a bad person.
Yeah, have you actually heard that, or is it just because he's a very, you know, he has a, funny you say that, because when this past NFL draft, it showed like a live shot of Belichick's house, because they were, I guess, filming him for the draft. And there was a moment where it was just his dog in the picture. I loved it, man. I love it. Yeah, Belichick, I mean, he's probably a dick, but I mean, he's just like an old school football guy. And I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of parallels with like him and a guy like Greg Popovich. I mean, is it just me, or do those guys kind of seem like they're not too different of people? And that's probably what makes them extremely successful.
Mm-hmm. Well, also Nick Saban too.
Yeah. I mean, they're all kind of weirdos. I feel like Nick Saban's like the least weird out of those three. You know, but they all have like a traditional philosophy, but are really good at blending it with modern ideas. You know, and they just kind of do stuff their own way. They're not worried about the fads, you know, like in the NFL. Like, I swear people are hiring. I think, what's the LA Rams guy's name?
Sean McVay.
Yeah, I swear that Sean McVay's mailman got a head coaching job, you know, like It just seems like there's such fads and trends, and you know, guys like Popovich and Belichick and Saban, they don't buy into that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what everyone else is doing because what I have works.
Exactly. I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah.
I'm like a football nerd. Everyone knows that. Like, when my friends like ask to hang out, I'm like, oh, I can't. I'm watching this documentary on Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. And there's a really good documentary on those two. I think like HBO did or something like that. And because Saban was the defensive coordinator when Belichick was the head coach of the Browns, and it was just an hour of those two like talking football. And I live for that kind of crap. It was so funny because when the two like walked into the room and you know, said hello to each other, you know, they're longtime friends and everything. And the first thing that they started talking about was like what kind of defensive schemes they were running. Not like, hey, how are you? How's the family? Goes like, yeah, like Belichick was talking, goes like, yeah, we ran a lot of nickel defense, things like that. and I loved it, man.
What a nerd.
I love it. Oh,
out of those three, who would you rather get lunch with?
Oh man,
like working Popovich, Saban, and Belichick.
I'd probably say either Saban or Belichick because I'm a basketball guy, but I'm not like a basketball nerd like I am with football. And okay. So, like either Belichick or Saban, like I would pay hundreds of dollars that I don't have to go do that, like, yeah, just to like talk football. And I love just getting into the minds and learning from the minds of winners, honestly.
You know, this is probably an unpopular opinion, but I actually have a lot of respect for Nick Saban, and I would probably choose him, honestly. I think that would be pretty an easy choice, actually. He's just an interesting dude to me. Yeah. I mean, for that reason, and that college football kind of is more trendy than any other sport. And dude, he's always just done things his way. He's managed to maintain being a disciplinarian when no other school can kind of get away with that and be successful. You know, like what other team has that tight of standards and is winning as much and still getting as many high profile recruits? Like it's just kind of unheard of. So I don't know. And I just love the way that he is. I don't know, that interview where he, you know, talks about his, I think it was Mushin Muhammad when he was at Michigan State, and how, you know, he was saying how people want him to kick him off the team. And he's like, I just had to think, like, where do we want this kid? You know, do we want him on the street? Do we want him, you know, in that environment, or do we want him in an environment with structure where, you know, he has a locker room, he has a whole panel of coaches that can help mentor him and help him do right and stuff. So
yeah,
I would just love to, you know, he's probably experienced a lot of the human condition, and that stuff interests me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so like, it's so fascinating to me, but it is time to get our next guest on. What do you say?
I will dial him up right now. Lance, how are you, man?
How you doing, bro?
Lance, what's going on, brother? Thank you so much for coming on.
Man, I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
All right. So we now welcome on to the show former Canes wide receiver Lance Leggett. He played from 04 to 07 during the Larry Coker and Randy Shannon era. Lance, how's life going, man? What you been up to?
Man, I'm doing good, man. Just have a couple business ventures I'm doing right now, and I'm pushing forward and working hard towards that.
Absolutely. So before we start asking questions, why don't you talk a little bit about the Speed Academy that you got going on and anything else that you're working on?
Yes. With the Lance Leggett Speed Academy, this is something I wanted to do probably about 3 years ago. And my good friend, Tony Gaskins, who's the number one celebrity life coach right now, he been on me for the past 3 years and telling me I need to do this, man. He's like, man, you got a gift, Lance. I feel like you keeping it in. But I'm the type of person, I'm real camera shy. I don't like getting on the camera. If you look on my social medias, I never put up a video in my life. So when we did the recording and the filming for Legged Speed Academy, I was kind of nervous, but I got it done. And with the help of Tony, that's the one who really pushed me to do it. My other business venture, I have a couple business partners, two business partners. We into the real estate right now. We've been buying properties and building single family homes for parents. Mothers whose mother or fathers who have a nurse or a doctor. Nurse or a school teacher. So we really working hard on that. The construction company is called OD Jones, and we just trying to grow it and make it bigger than what it is.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. I love hearing.
I got another one too, but I don't want to go on. A lot of people don't know the past couple of years I was into trucking. I got my own semi trucks too, so as well. So a lot of that I don't really put that on social media because I'm more of a private person. But this Legged Speed Academy, I got to really push it.
Cool. That's cool, man. We're happy to support whatever you're doing. That's really cool that you're trying to make a difference in your community too. So.
Yeah, man, that Legged Speed Academy, I think it's going to be, honestly, I've been getting a lot of good feedback. I think it's very affordable. It's nothing but $19.97 for anybody they can purchase the academy. But other than that, that's all I've been doing, just working hard, man. Got to work hard. Got to be able to leave my kids something once I'm off this earth.
Yeah, I feel that, man. So I guess getting right into it, the first question I want to ask you, you know, it's been like recruiting season so far until we kick off. You know, there's lots of hype around the Miami Hurricanes program. Everyone's excited about this recruiting class we got. So you were a 5-star recruit in high school.
Correct.
And I'm just very curious at what it's like to be a 5-star recruit. You know, I mean, being 17, 18 years old, you know, I don't know if you'd call it pressure or validation, you know, but just having that much attention on you as a young kid, I want to know what that's like, man.
Man, I honestly loved it. When I came in, I always I loved to compete. So me coming in, me and Willie Williams was the top recruits we had come in that year when we came in, both of us 5-stars. And I would never forget our first 707, man. Oh, Spider-Man, you think you all that, huh? We finna see what you about. So they would call it back. And, hey, I did what I had to do. So they already knew, like, oh, he's serious. He bought his business. But they didn't know. Man, I worked hard all my life. That came from my dad. Like he always pushed me. He always showed me how to compete against other players. So I was never scared of competition. So I just wanted to always go out and compete. And I did.
I love that because, I mean, especially when you talk about like the early to mid 2000s at the University of Miami, you know, that competition on Greentree was everything. When you came in as a true freshman, what was it like, you know, going against, I mean, because when you came in as a true freshman, Antrell Roll was still in the defense and that defense was, I mean, it was still pretty stacked. So what was it like competing against those guys every single day?
Man, listen. Antrell, like that's a big brother to me. This is a true story right here. I'm gonna go back to that day, our first 707 when they was talking to us. My first rep going out there, we had went out that night. They had me. We went out and party, and we had 707 the next morning. Man, I was half asleep. And man, when the quarterback hiked the ball. Man, and Trey jammed me up real good. I'm talking about he jammed me up real good. And that was his first time and last time jammed me up. I said, you'll never jam me up again. But that showed me, hey, you got to get it. If you don't know how to party like these boys, you knew that. If you don't know how to party like these boys, then come work. You know what I'm saying? So I had to learn how to put that work in. But I wasn't really a party. I didn't party that much in college. But that showed me, hey, you got to be on your A game every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you came in. And, you know, you played as a true freshman, and the first game of your true freshman season was the overtime thriller against Florida State when Frank Gore ran it in. What was it like being, like, for that being your first college game and being in the old Orange Bowl with 80,000 people in it?
Man, listen, that was like a dream come true. A lot of people didn't know. Miami was my dream school growing up. I always been a Miami fan. A lot of people like, we from Central Florida, Polk County. It's a lot of Gator fans up here. So I committed to Florida first. And then I like, no, that's not my dream school. I'm going to Miami. But playing in that Orange Bowl, it was crazy. It was real crazy. I actually loved that, man. I got on the field. I never forget going against Antonio Cromartie. Man, I had one play. Brock didn't see me. I ran past him. Damn, I Brock him. So it's prime time. I'm ready to get this ball, man. And I want to show out for the whole team from back in Bartow, Florida. But I loved it, man. That's what I dreamed to play. Going to Miami, you always dream to play in Florida State.
So, I mean, because I was a kid. I was at that game. You know, I was just a kid watching you when I was in the Orange Bowl and you were on the field. That Miami Florida State rivalry was everything to me. And you were part of some classic games too. I mean, 04, the overtime game, and then 05, you guys go up to Tallahassee. It's a defensive struggle. And we end up, you know, bobbling the field goal that would ultimately tie the game. Going into that game, you guys had beaten Florida State, I think, 6 straight times. What was it like losing to Florida State in 05? Like, what was the locker room like after that game?
It was real. It was hurtful. We wanted to really win that game, man, especially me. I didn't have a game I wanted to have. That game right there, the media, they was talking about me and Hester a lot. And I didn't come up and show what I needed to do that game. I was very disappointed. And I know we had to pick it up. After that game, a lot of people had their heads. Now, you know how it is. A lot of people, we know a lot of the players on Florida State, and a lot of players know us. So we wanted that W.
Yeah. And I remember just bawling my eyes out after that game, man. That was a tough one. You talk about Devin Hester, and that 05 or 04, 05, pretty much his whole career, the dude was a human highlight reel and continued to be so in the NFL. What was it like, you know, because he played some receiver. What was it like being on the field at the same time as Devin Hester and just watching him go?
See, I can't even say just Devin Hester. Imagine being in the huddle with Frank Gore, Greg Olsen, Eric Winston. Shoot, the list goes on. Santana Moss, Roscoe Parrish. Just imagine being in the game with those guys. Man, you looking at like, you got to be a superstar. You got to be an athlete to be in the huddle with these guys and starting at that. But, man, Hester used to be amazing, man. Hester was amazing.
I remember the Duke game in 05 when he had that ridiculous return. He broke about 15 tackles. And I was just sitting in the stands. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is incredible. Man. And I remember my dad bought me a Hester jersey right after that.
Man, Hester was amazing, man. It's just a gift that he had. A lot of people don't have it. Hester got that straightaway speed, but he could cut at the same time without losing speed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so I wanted to ask you these two questions. I want you to list the best win you ever had at Miami and the most devastating loss you ever had at Miami.
The best win I had at Miami. Man, I'm honest. I'm going to go back my freshman year. My freshman year was the funnest year ever, I promise you. My freshman year was the funnest year. I would say I love that Louisville game, how we came from behind. Because I made a big play in that game. I think it was like third and like 15 or something like that. And I'll never forget Brock Berlin. He told me in the huddle, Lance, I'm coming to you as a freshman. I'm like, let's go. Hey, I caught that dig route and I tried to break it, but I got my lip bust on that play and everything, but I kept the drive alive, and that's what really kept that drive alive so we could get that touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were down 24-7, and Brock brought it back, man.
You asked me the other question.
Yeah, most devastating loss.
The most devastating loss, you already know. The last game in the Orange Bowl. That was the worst game ever.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's the worst game ever. You know you want to go out with a bang, and that team was not better than us at all. Everybody was just frustrated.
I don't want to come off as like, you know, coming down or anything, but like, what happened that game? Like, what do you think went wrong?
I can't tell you. If I can answer that question, I promise you. I know, like I say, I can't answer that question. I don't even know.
I remember, like, that crowd was ready to go before that game. I remember The Rock introduced you guys coming out of the helmet. We were bumping, and then I remember there was we recovered a fumble for a touchdown, but it got called back.
Man, that's crazy. You remember the game better than I do.
it was such a I think I was like 12 at the time and just sitting in the stands, and it was the last game at the Orange Bowl. It was a special night. So yeah, I remember that game for the wrong reasons, but
yeah, it was devastating.
I want to this may not a controversial topic, but so your freshman year, you're with Brock Berlin, and Brock, he didn't put up incredible stats, but he won at Miami, and that's the most important thing. And then you go to Kyle Wright, who came in as a five-star quarterback out of California, and with so much hype, and you could see that he had the talent, but he just didn't, his career just didn't pan out at Miami. And I know for me, I give Kyle Wright a bad rep sometimes just because he didn't win. But why don't you think, talk about Kyle Wright a little bit as your quarterback?
Mac, I think it was more of a mental thing, honestly. If we could have got on the same page with Kyle, man, it would have been crazy. It was crazy. We just couldn't never get on the same. Honestly, we couldn't get on the receivers and the quarterbacks couldn't get on the same page. That's just point blank, period. I don't care what nobody say. We wasn't on the same page. If we had it like with Brock, man, I wish I had Brock one more year. If I had Brock for one more year, boy, Brock
such crazy. What made Brock such a good quarterback and such a good leader?
Man, Brock was he was a people person. You could tell him, you could talk to him. And Brock, man, you could go just look back at my freshman year. Brock used to let that ball go and let me run up under it. You see what I'm saying? And that's that was the difference for me.
Okay. Well, so speaking of that era, you were on the team when you got to the team, Larry Coker was the coach. When you left the school, Randy Shannon was the coach. That was a very interesting time for the University of Miami. Coker, he almost went undefeated in his first 2 years as coach. He ended up getting fired 2 years after the Ohio State loss. And then, Randy Shannon's tenure was just a frustrating time in Miami Hurricanes history. What are your reflections on those two coaches in terms of the difference of how they managed the team and just what it was like to play under them?
Well, I like both of them. I like Coach Coker and I like Coach Shannon. Man, Coach Coker, he shouldn't have lost his job. He shouldn't have lost his job. But then you have Coach Shannon come in. Everybody we knew Coach Shannon. We love Coach Shannon. So it really wasn't like, dang, we lost Coach Coker, but then we got Coach Shannon. Man, Coach Coker should have still been there. I promise you, Coach Coker could have been there another 10 years after that. But being at Miami, you can't take them L's. And you already know they're going to look in another direction.
Yeah.
Well, and that 2006 season, that was just a frustrating one in general. Because, you guys came into the year, I think, ranked 11th in the preseason. And you had FSU at home week one. And you had a lot of expectations that year. What was the vibe different in the locker room at the start of the season compared to your first 2 years? Because your first 2 years, you went 9-3 both seasons. And then you get to 2006. Was the culture starting to change a little bit? Or what do you have to say about that?
Well, a lot of people don't understand. When they know football, they'll look at it and they'll understand. At Miami, this is what messed up our program. A lot of kids leave early. When they leave early, guess what? Younger players have to play. When the younger players have to play, they're going against seniors on the other team. You see what I'm saying? So that was the main reason. It's more maturity than anything. Because I promise you, all those years I was there, my 4 years at Miami, shit, the talent was still the same. The talent was still good. We just couldn't put it together.
Do you think that is a reflection on the coaching or the players?
You can't. Hey, you think a coach could tell a kid, "Hey, stay here," and he got family back at home. He need to take care of. No, he's going to go make that money. He got to take care of his kids. I mean, he got to take care of his family. And so you can't put that on the coaches. And you can't put it on the players. But, hey, that means younger players going to have to play. Just like I will go back. I know I'm jumping ahead. Let's go when Mark Richt. When all that whole D-line left, McIntosh. Who was McIntosh?
Norton.
All them boys left early. I told everybody to say, next year, it won't be a good year. They're like, why? Look at that D-line that left. Now you got young players who got to play.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, man. That's a really good point.
It's crazy because even when I came in, we had older players, but I just came in like, hey, I'm coming to play. But I was young and playing. It wasn't that many freshmen playing when I was playing, but it got over the years, you could start seeing more and more freshmen playing and less seniors.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. Well, I have a question from my we're really good friends. I guess, you know, LaVon Ponder is a good friend of the podcast. He's been on 4 or 5 times. You know, you played with him. So he wanted us to ask you, I think as a joke, if you remember your fight in practice with DeMarcus Van Dyke.
Yeah, man, I remember. I'm going to tell you the story. It was so funny. I remember to this day. It was funny, man. So DeMarcus Van Dyke, DVD, he was younger. And matter of fact, we was in team and we was scrimmaging against each other. Every time I run, he kept holding me. I'm like, hey, don't hold me no more. All right, I'm gonna do it again. So just so happened, I think it was a deep route. I can't remember if it was a post route or a go route. Man, he grabbed me. That's all he had to do. But that's my boy. Honestly, DVD, we good, we cool, we see each other. Like, I only have Facebook and Twitter, so when I speak to him, me, it's no bad blood. That's just part of practice. I can name a million fights that happen that a lot of people don't know. I promise, at least.
Yeah.
In camp, if we're in camp in 2 days, you're going to at least see a fight every day. But during the season, it's kind of rare. But that was during the season, man. I ain't like how he was holding me, so I had to. Yeah. I was older, so I'm like, hey, I had to just really show him a little bit. But that's my brother. Nothing against him. At the end of the day, both of us got to compete. I just ain't like him holding me all the time.
Yep. No, I understand that, man. And I guess, do you have any LaVon Ponder stories that you want to share that, you know, that he'd have to clap back to? You know, maybe we'd get him on to answer for it. So do you have fun stories about LaVon?
Ask him how I used to run past him in practice. I used to run past him, man. I was always fast. Everybody knew I was fast. But no, man, Ponder was an athlete, honestly. A lot of people don't know Ponder was good in basketball, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, Ponder was that deal in high school now.
Yeah. I remember it's just crazy talking to you guys now because I was just a kid watching you guys. I the game I have to ask about is the FIU game. 2006. You knew it was coming. It was a game where you actually caught 2 touchdowns. You know, you played really well that night. Talk about when we go to kick the extra point and all hell breaks loose. Talk about just being in the middle of all that and your reaction and just talk about the infamous FIU brawl.
I love it. If we could do it again, I'd do it again now. But no, man. Honestly, man, them boys was kind of playing like kind of – I play dirty. I don't care. But they was kind of playing – taking little cheap shots all game. And it was bound to happen. Who going to let a person keep taking cheap shots on them?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, you ain't going to take no cheap shot on me and think you're going to get away with it. I got to get you back. And, hey, it was a crazy brawl. But if we could do it again today, I'd love to do it again.
Well, I mean, that's a good point because – There were a few instances in that game of, you know, FIU playing a little dirty even before the brawl. I mean, there were penalties being flown out, you know, right and left.
Yep.
It was crazy. And then fights were breaking out in the stands. It was amazing. And just I was just in awe watching that. You always hear about brawls and then like on TV and then you actually get to see it in person. It was nuts.
So imagine if we had social media back then. Like, we had social media, but it wasn't like how it was now. Man, that thing would have been going crazy. It would have been trending so bad on every social media platform.
Yeah. Absolutely. So
my MSN Messenger was blowing up when that happened.
Yep.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Okay, so you know, you've been away from UM for 13 years now. Are you do you still watch the Canes every Saturday, or are you still close to some of your former teammates?
Man, I during that Jenkins, we still talk a lot. That's the one I talk to the most. I talk to Newt. Everybody call it Newt. That's who I talk to the most. But honestly, it's gonna sound crazy. If Miami playing the same time as Indiana University, I don't catch the Miami games because my stepson, he played with Indiana University. But other than that, you already know I'm in front of the TV with Miami playing.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, that's a good excuse to play to watch Indiana. What position does he play?
Oh, he play wide receiver. He that deal. Honestly, a lot of people might think he probably the best. I think he the best college wide receiver in college.
Really?
Yep, that's awesome. They call him Walk Failure. He's number one for Indiana. Man, he could play. He a baller. He had over 1,000 yards this year. He's on a wide receiver watch list for the award this year. So he's doing like good things up there.
Well, he had you to learn from, so I'm sure he's balling out. So one of my last questions for you. We ask this to everybody, that every former player that comes on. What does being a Miami Hurricane mean to you, and what has it meant to you in your life?
Man, it meant a lot to me, honestly, man. It was it's a brotherhood. It's a place where you can network. Not too many people could say they played at University of Miami, so it's like it's bragging rights. It's a lot, man. I just love it. I'm happy I didn't pick another school because the people I met, I probably would have never met these people, and I'm happy I went there.
Absolutely, bro. We love it, man. We love it. And then, okay, I'll ask one more question. Man, if you had to pick,
ask me how many questions you want to ask me. I'm good. I freed up all my time for you.
I love it. I love it. What's one signature? Like, what's your one signature play from your Miami career?
Come on, now my first touchdown, Georgia Tech. They were talking about the thing. I'm gonna tell you, it was so crazy. They were talking about me and Calvin Johnson, both of us freshmen coming in. I'm like, shit. I was ranked higher than Calvin Johnson, but don't take nothing out of Calvin. That's Megatron. He that deal. Man. I love him. But I wasn't going to let him have a better game than me. And I'll never forget, same thing. I was in the huddle. I could tell you to play. 8:20. It was 8:24. No, 8:26. I'm sorry. And Brock came to me in the huddle. He said, Lance, I'm coming to you. Run past him. And it was a post route. And it was one, the DB I was going against, one of our teammates, that was his teammate in college. And he was talking to us all week. Man, that freshman ain't gonna, he was bragging on me. Like, well, we got this freshman, boy. He can play, he fast now. You better not let him run past you. Man, he ain't gonna do nothing, he's a freshman. So just so happened, look who was guarding me on that play. And Brock told me, hey, Lance, burn him, I'm coming to you. And when I looked up, that ball was in the air, and I got that touchdown. So I had all them text messages after the game. You already know how it was.
I love it, man. I love it. Those Georgia Tech games, I remember you won there as a freshman. And then, okay, let me ask you these two games, back-to-back games, or I don't know if they were back-to-back. It's 05. You go up to Virginia Tech. You're number five in the country. They're number three in the country. They're undefeated. You know, they got Marcus Vick. The place is packed. College game day was there. What was it like to go in there and just beat their ass?
Yeah, that felt good. It was cold as hell. It was cold as hell that night. That's the night. That was the night we had on all white. And it was an easy game, honestly. It's Virginia Tech. It was easy.
you guys won by 20. I mean,
That's how you know we still had the talent that it showed that night. A lot of people don't know, like, man, Miami fell off. No, we did. The talent's still there. I'm going to tell you what the NFL do. If Miami don't win, the players don't get drafted. How they'll get them. They feel like, okay, we know they got the talent, but they didn't win, so we'll get them for cheap. It's a business. Miami win, a lot of players go in the first round. We have a good record, you see a lot of players get drafted. The talent is there. But that's how I go. That's the business.
That's a very good point. I mean, the year that you came in, the 2004 draft, that's when Miami set the record with 6 first rounders. Yep. That's when we were winning. But if you look at the last 15 years, I mean, we just haven't had that many first round picks.
I'm gonna give you four examples, right? I can name a couple first rounders on our team that could have went first round, but I'm about to give you an example. Sam Shields. Sam Shields came out highly recruited. It was real good, fast, can play. Didn't get drafted. But I always told people, when Sam didn't get drafted, I promise you, I told my cousin, I say, Sam going to make a team. He like, no. I say, Sam going to make a team. I say, Sam, good. Don't let that shit fool you. I'm sorry, I curse, but hey, I curse. But I say, don't let it fool you.
All good.
He can play. And look what Sam did. Made the Pro Bowl a couple years in the NFL, and he was one of the star players on the Green Bay Packers.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's why I try to tell people, like, even when I left, I didn't get drafted, but they tried to get, because I hurt my knee, they were trying to get me the red shirt. I'm like, man, listen, I got to go make me some money. I go make a team. I know why I make a team, because I know the competition I went against. And it was easy. That's why I was able to stay in Cleveland for 2 years, but my knee, it kept messing up on me, so I had to hang it up.
Okay. Okay. Dang, well, that's tough. That's tough, man.
That is.
Okay, so sorry, go ahead, Jordan.
Well, I have a quick question for you. Just, I mean, you played against a lot of good defensive backs at the University of Miami.
Played against first rounders.
Yeah, a bunch of first rounders. I mean, we already talked about Ontrell Roll, Kenny Phillips, Brandon Merriweather.
Kelly Jennings.
Bruce Johnson. Bruce
Johnson. We go down the list. It's too many. Glenn Sharp. If I'm gonna tell you, that was the best one right there, Glenn Sharp. If Glenn Sharp went to both his ACLs, a lot of people would have knew about him.
Okay, well, that kind of goes along with my question. I'm wondering if there's any dudes in practice that when you had to line up against them, you know, not that it like. I mean, I guess who was the guy that you had the most battles with, that you were excited to go against him, or you were like, oh, crap, this guy again, you know, that kind of
stuff? I was always, because Coach Curtis Johnson used to, my freshman year, he talked kind of funny. Lance, say, bro, don't go against the freshman. You're too good for the freshman. You need to go against Andrea Rowe. So I used to love to go against Andrea. And Andrea probably don't know to this day, but CJ always told me, he said, Lance, he ain't faster than you. So every time you go against him in one-on-ones, run a deep route. And that's what I did. That's how I used to always be in trail, because I run a deep route because I knew I was faster than him.
I love it, man.
Yep.
I mean, because the talent, and well, throughout your years at Miami was insane, but especially as a freshman, I mean, that's when Miami was still Miami. And just the talent that was on that field, it's insane to think about.
You got to look. Greg Olsen wasn't even starting my freshman year. That's crazy, huh?
Mm-hmm. That is crazy. And so what's it like seeing, like, your college teammates like Greg Olsen and Frank Gore still playing in the NFL?
Man, I love it. Honestly, I love it, man, because it just shows, like, what we produce. I don't feel like no other university produce what we produce. They can have a winning record. They can have better records. I don't feel like they produce what we produce.
Why do you think Miami produces at another level?
Well, now, Florida football. We're the best football. If we the best football state, we got the best players. We got the best athletes. So that's why.
Yeah. I mean,
I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, not much more to say than that.
You got to understand. You have to understand, too. Being in Miami, you can have a lot of down south kids. And I'm from Florida. I'm from Polk County, Central Florida. It's rough up here, but it's a little different down in Miami. And so them down there, they was raised different, and then they try to go make money because they gotta provide for their family. So you see them kids going hard, you ain't got no choice but to go hard.
I think that's why, you know, Miami is different from other places in the country, because, you know, a lot of players are trying to get out and you know, make something, like, because they got nowhere else to go. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. And a lot of kids, like I say, when they're coming out of high school, they like feel like they got to get away from Miami. Look at all them kids. Look at all those kids come from South Florida and they go to these other schools. Come on now, man. These schools would be pathetic without these kids from South Florida or Florida, period.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you think, you know, winning the recruiting battle in South Florida, which Miami, I mean, I don't know how much you follow recruiting nowadays, but we're killing it right now. Manny Diaz is killing it in recruiting. We've got a couple of 5-stars all from South Florida. Do you think that is one of the biggest keys in Miami being back?
No, it don't have to just be South Florida. We can't just say South Florida. It's just Florida, period. Because up here in Polk County, we got some ballers. I'm telling you, we got some ballers up here. Mm-hmm. We had the number one running back last year, Bowman, who went to Clemson. So imagine if he would have went to Miami. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now, do you think when Miami is recruiting these kind of guys like Bowman, if Miami was winning, how much does that play into the, kids coming to UM?
I'm going to give you for example. Okay, remember the year we had with Mark Rick? Hmm? And we was undefeated for a couple games?
Yeah, 10-0.
Man, look at that. Look how the culture changed. Look, who didn't love watching college football when we won? College, when Miami winning, it's different. It's just a different feel. I'm like, man, I love this shit. You see what I'm saying? I'm being honest, I love it. I'm like, I love this shit when we winning. But when we ain't winning, it's like, who cares about college football? I'm going to watch Indiana.
Dude, that's a good point. Like, when Miami, like that 2017 season, like when we beat Notre Dame and we beat Virginia Tech and we had the turnover chain, college football was just more exciting. And you see, the biggest ESPN guys or ABC guys, Fowler and Herbstreit, they were in Miami a couple times that year to call games. And it's different when Miami is winning. And that's what, we're trying to get back towards. Are you a fan of Manny Diaz? Do you know much about him?
No, I love him. I love Manny. I just love his style. I love his attitude. I love how he's aggressive. And I know, one thing about him, he's a businessman. I'm a businessman. If you don't like it, you got to get you up out of there. And that's what he did, with the offensive coordinator. I'm sorry. You got to go. You too vanilla. You too mild. We don't want that. We got these players on the sideline who can run. Don't get a player. The game has changed. It's spread offense. Put these players out here, spread them out, and let them go. That's what we like to do. We love to run. Let them run.
Yeah. Okay, so how much of a difference do you think it would have made if the teams you were on at Miami were running a spread offense? Because, you had a good running back. You had Tyrone Moss, rest in peace, and some of these other guys. And, they were okay, but with the speed – I mean, especially with your speed, and you had, Sonoris Moss and, Jenkins. How much of a difference do you think a spread offense would have made?
Man, come on, every guy you just named, all of us ran track, and then you got Hester bringing Hester in. Everybody ran track. A lot of people don't know that at Miami, a lot of the players ran track. Hey, it would have been a track meet out there. You already know what it would have looked like. No team would have been able to guard us.
That makes me mad just thinking about how much better those teams could have been.
Then when I was there, they were on the team really kind of running. It was a couple teams running the spread offense, but at Miami, when I was there, we was balanced. We was a balanced offense. So
yeah,
you had to get it in when you can.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
And then how can you say we only gonna give Frank Gore the ball 10 times? Heck no, you can't say that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think about, what would have happened if Frank could have stayed healthy his entire time at Miami. That was another that's another situation I think a lot about. Because Frank, I don't know how many injuries he had at Miami and still is balling today.
Yeah, man. Hey, it's good. I'm going to tell you why. A lot of people, I look at that as a blessing. Frank, them couple years he missed with his ACL, the only thing he did was, took a look. They gave him more time on his life in the NFL, less pounding on his body. You understand? See what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, Lance, thank you so much for coming on, brother. This was I'm serious. I could talk to you for 3 hours. I love.
I told you I freed up all my time for you. So if you want to keep going, we could keep going.
Well, hey, how about, we can have you on in a few more weeks once the season gets going and hopefully the Canes are winning by then. Hopefully we're 2-0. Or maybe, how about this? We can have you on the week of the Florida State game.
Let's do it because that Florida State week, a lot of – well, I'm here in Central Florida in Polk County. It's a lot of Florida fans and there's a lot of Florida State fans in this area. So we could do it.
I'm putting it on my calendar right now, man. I'm pumped. I'm almost as pumped for that interview as I am for the actual Florida State game. So that's going to be
fun, man. Oh, yeah. But thank you for having me. I just want to let everybody know check out Leggett Speed Academy. It's only $19.97. I promise you, it'll help your kids get fast. I promise you it would. This the same. This the recipe my dad gave me. He trained me when I was young, and I'm just trying to live on his legacy.
Absolutely, yeah. Everyone go check that out. And Lance, we'll be talking to you in a few weeks then. All right, brother?
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Go Canes.
Thanks, man. That was cool, man. I love talking to former players.
Yeah. That, I mean, like, I was serious. I kind of felt bad because I just kept asking questions. I mean, and he was giving great answers, too. Like,
yeah.
And he gave really good insights on, you know, players leaving early being a big issue and, you know, things like that. It's because that is just, you know, matriculated over the past 10, 15 years. If these players leave early and, you know, you have to play these younger players, and that a lot of people don't talk about that enough when it comes to Miami, you know, falling off a little bit.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting to, you know, to hear him talk about Glenn Sharp. And then also, I just loved his confidence, man. You know, I love that he's still like, Green Tree would have been really, really fun in that era with all that talent. You can tell from the way that he talks about practice and going up against these guys that, you know, made tens of millions of dollars in the NFL. And he's still, you know, he just has that competitive edge. It would have been so cool to watch those practices.
Yeah, man. And I'm excited. I think we need to do a few fun things for FSU week.
Yeah.
Like maybe we could even get his good buddy Antrell Roll on.
Oh, that would be great.
That would be amazing. That would be incredible. Okay. So one last thing we got to do before we sign off for today. Mount Marshmore is back. And today we are counting down or listing our Mount Marshmore of defensive players during the Manny Diaz era, so the 2016 to the present. And Jordan, I am going to let you go first. And so then, just the rules again, we go back and forth, and we can't name the same player as the other guy. So I will let you go first.
Okay. Okay. My first guy that I'm going to take is Sheldrick Redwine with my first pick. I mean, these aren't my best players. These are my favorite players, you know, just the guys that I loved watching. I love what they brought to the table. You know, I'm definitely a guy that, like, even though I appreciated Jaquan Johnson, you know, guys like that and guys like Michael Jackson and, you know, more of the star players. I'm definitely, I don't know. I appreciate role players, man. I appreciate guys that accept their role and just show up and give it 110% and excel at it, even if it's not like, you know, even if they're not having a starring role. So
yeah, I mean, and Redwine, I think Redwine, he's awesome. I mean, him throwing up the 305 after the Virginia Tech game, that's my screensaver right now. Like Redwine was the best, and all the messages he used to leave on the whiteboard,
yeah,
that was awesome.
Loved it.
Yeah. Okay. So I am going to go with Jaquan Johnson as my first guy. I am like one of the biggest Jaquan Johnson fans out there. I mean, he wasn't the fastest guy. He wasn't the biggest guy, but he led the team in tackles, I think, 2017 and 2018. And he was a playmaker. I mean, you think about the one-handed interception against Virginia Tech and him knocking the ball out for McIntosh to recover against Virginia Tech, or the pick six against Virginia. And he was just a leader. He would lead by example. He wasn't a loud guy. He was just awesome. Love Jaquan Johnson.
Yeah. Okay. I will go. Oh, let's see, man. We had so many fun players come through in the last few years. I'm going to go with Corn Elder.
That's your boy.
Honestly, like, Corn and Sheldrick are my two dudes. Like, they're two of my favorite, like, underappreciated Miami Hurricanes, or, you know, like, non-star players that are my absolute favorites. I just love those dudes. Our secondary was so good when we had those two and Jaquan, and, you know, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 2018 and 2017, I think we had the number one pass defense. So, okay, my next player is I'm going to go with Gerald Willis.
Okay.
Just based on the 2018 season alone. I mean, I think people don't remember how dominant he was that year. Like, he was just an absolute monster in the middle, you know, against Florida State during the 27-7 comeback. He was all over Francois, and he was just in the backfield every play. And he, I'm still shocked he didn't go drafted. One day I need to know the reason why he did not go drafted. But yeah, Gerald Willis is my number two.
Okay. Oh man, this is where it gets tough, man. I'm gonna go Joe Jackson.
Ooh, you took one. I was gonna say him.
Dude, he was so good. He was so good when he was at Miami.
He was so fast off the edge.
Yeah. And, I mean, I remember him as, what was it, a true freshman? Wasn't that the year that, like, Chad Thomas was a senior and he was a true freshman? And he was just making so many plays that we didn't even, like, I remember not even feeling that bad when Chad left, you know? I was just like, well, you know, like, Chad was great, but we got Joe coming back, dude.
Yeah, he's a player that I wish would have stayed his senior season.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. I remember his pick six that he had against UNC when we were in the blackout jerseys. He was just he was always in the backfield getting to the quarterback. So, dang, that was one that I was going to get. Oh, here's an easy one. I'm going to go Gregory Rousseau.
Okay, that
worked. And I wish he was still here. Wish him all the best. We're trying to get him on the podcast, actually. He was one of the players that, like, I remember last season, even when we sucked, I would wake up on Saturday mornings and say, oh, I get to watch Greg Rousseau play football today. Like, yeah. The two-game stretch against Pitt and against Florida State where he had seven sacks in those two games, It was incredible. So Greg is my number three. Okay, last one. Who you got?
Oh man, this is where it gets tough. Now there's so many guys that I could take. I don't know. You know, I'm giving you the pick. You go while I'm thinking. You can have my pick.
Oh man, who am I gonna take? I'm trying to decide between these two guys. I'm going to go Trajan Bandy.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, and a lot of it has to do with the pick six against Notre Dame, man. That was, besides Darryl Langham's catch against Florida State and the comeback against FSU, I mean, Bandy's pick six is one of my favorite moments ever as a Miami Hurricane fan. And Bandy, he's like 5'8", but was just a dog on defense. Like, he would lay out receivers and he was just locked down corner. Another guy I wish we could really use him this season. I will say that, but yeah, Bandy is my fourth.
Yeah. Let's see. I mean, there's so many ways that we could go, you know, okay. I'll take Shaq. You know, I almost took RJ McIntosh, but I'm going to take Shaquille Quarterman. Think of how crazy it is to be a four-year starter at University of Miami.
Yeah.
And pretty much be the team leader. And you know how lucky our defense is because we had two of those dudes back-to-back. Because we had Denzel Perryman, who, like, took command of the defense as a true freshman. And then right as he leaves after, you know, being our biggest impact player for 4 years, we get Shaq Quarterman, who immediately fills that role. Like, that's crazy, man.
Yeah. I mean, and he was just a stand-up guy, man.
Yeah. Like, the fulcrum of your defense for 8 years is two different dudes. That's crazy. And
that's an insane thought.
Yeah. And so I'm going to go Shaq. You know, he never really a flashy player. But he's just kind of a lunch pail dude. I mean, to use that trope, you know, he always showed up. He got a whole mess of tackles. He was the, you know, the locker room leader on defense. And he just did his job, man. Starting for 4 years straight at a school like Miami is just kind of unheard of.
Yeah, absolutely. And then some honorable mentions was guys like Mike Pinckney, McIntosh, obviously, like you said. Yeah. Also Jonathan Garvin, I think, could have been named. So,
you know, I almost picked – I thought about picking Kendrick Norton strictly for, you know, the famous gif where he's, you know, playing – was that Francois that he sacked and then was playing the leg guitar on?
That was Blackman.
Oh, that was – dude, how old is Blackman? Is he like
– He's 16? A junior. Bro, he's only a junior.
Oh, my gosh, dude.
I know. I was shocked. He was named a FSU starting quarterback yesterday, so –
There's no way he's younger than 32.
And no way he weighs more than 120 pounds.
I swear. Dude, I remember him and Ja'Cory Harris going at it on Labor Day night.
I swear to God, it was Ken Dorsey against James Blackman.
Yeah, right. That's what it feels like.
I feel like he's been there for so long.
Dude, I'm pretty sure Bobby Bowden recruited him.
Pretty sure he played with Deion Sanders.
Yeah, right. He backed up Chris Ricks.
He backed up Chris Ricks. I love it. I love it. And I loved this episode, man. This was a really good one.
It was good. We had some good guests, man. It's Torian was great. Remember to check out Crafting Linemen, and also Lance was fantastic, and check out the, was it the Speed Academy, Lance Leggett Speed Academy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just check out his Twitter profile. I think it's just in his bio. It's just L9 Lance Leggett, so it should just be there. But we'll be back on Friday, I think?
Yeah. Is that the plan? Yeah, should be Friday. And again, you know, shout out to our guy, Stickers by AB. Helping us out as always. You know, he's cooking up some good merch for us, so hopefully we can get t-shirts for sale, hopefully by the UAB game. Maybe that's too soon. I don't know.
That's the plan. That's the plan, so.
Okay, but there will be t-shirts for sale. You can have them before FSU. Can we promise that?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Okay, so everyone's going to be wearing a Fours Up podcast t-shirt for the FSU game.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect. All right, man. Okay, we will see you guys on Friday. And until then, go Canes.
Go Canes.
This has been the Fours Up Podcast.